He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
And good evening. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. I got a bit of a cold this week.
Aww.
It's finally starting to ease, but there's nothing worse than a cold during the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, but fortunately it was nice and comfortable on the back porch so I could nap.
I managed to get back from the East Coast without a cold.
Right. And you got a nap in as well. So
that's right. I just flew in this morning. I was tired. I was awake this morning at 2 a.m. West Coast time, getting to the airport and getting on the plane. Thanks, Dad, for giving me a ride to the airport at the crack of dawn, before the dawn this morning. Thank you. And yep. Here I am. I was back east to meet with a new employer, a new team member, a new organization that you've probably heard of. I'm going to be telling you more next week. It was a lot of fun. Got to meet a lot of new people, see some clients, got a lot of work done, and see New York, and it was a good time. And then I got to see a lot of family in Pennsylvania. Can't beat that. And a wedding. Slid a wedding in there somewhere, too.
Wow.
It's good times.
Wow. Sounds like it was a busy week.
It was.
Yeah. I went to garage sales this weekend, and I picked up this fabulous case.
Nice. That looks cool.
To display my microphones in.
My dad would appreciate that very much because he's got several cases like that of tchotchkes and collectibles and antiques.
Yeah, well, somebody was having a moving sale, and I'm like, ooh, a glass case.
In fact, this pee-pee puppy came from there, which you guys will have to see later because you can't see me.
You've seen the pee-pee puppy.
You've seen the pee-pee puppy, okay. Anywho, anyway. So I came home from visiting Elle at the park today. I got to see Elle for the first time. I even got video of her running from about 100 feet away. Daddy! You know, can't beat it. Best thing ever for a dad, you know. And came home and walked up to my step, and there was a couple of boxes that said Sennheiser on them, which can only mean one thing, is that some microphones showed up. And one of my wonderful clients wanted to demo some mics, so I contacted our buddy Chris Currier over there at Sennheiser Neumann, and he shipped a couple of mics over. So I thought I'd have a little bit of show and tell.
What a guy.
What do you say?
Yeah, so let's show and let's tell.
All right. So let's see here. What do I got? What do we got here? We got a TLM 193, which is probably one that you guys may be the least familiar with. I also have a U87 AI NI, and I believe the NI stands for nickel finish, which is the silverish color that people are used to seeing probably. And I have a TLM 103 MT, which is like the dark color. And so I'll break these out here. I'll just show you what they look like in comparison so you can see their physical size and we can compare the features. And weighing in also, we've also got our guest who's going to be on later for the more formal part of the interview, but we're also going to have our buddy Juan Carlos Bagnell. Juan, you're going to be hanging out and commenting on the mics.
Absolutely. I'm always down to chat some mics.
Thanks, man. Well, we're going to geek out together here. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a better camera shot where Juan can actually be seen. Sorry about that.
Pull him in here
a little bit more.
I promise I'm not really missing much. I mean, I am some audio guy, not some video guy. So.
Exactly. Got you, man. Well, thanks for coming early so you could hang out and talk mics with us. But
of course.
Appreciate it. So let me get to this big shot here so we can see a little better. Okay, so I'll pull out the mics that are maybe more familiar to some of us. The 800-pound gorilla, arguably, of voiceover, I would say, especially in New York, would be the U87. And this is a venerable microphone that has been in production in some form or another since, when, the late 60s? Is that about right?
Well, it was the late 60s because we also saw all those service bulletins in the 70s about people working the mics too close and getting tobacco all over them.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Before the days where they banned cigarettes from the studio. But this was when they went solid state and started getting away from tubes. Actually, we got a really interesting clip from Wes Dooley at AEA, the ribbon guy, talking about his experience using Neumann mics way back when. We'll have that in an upcoming show. But anyway, this is the U87. This is what it looks like. It's the mic that it seems that almost every large diaphragm condenser microphone in existence is modeled on by this point. This is what's considered to be a large diaphragm condenser microphone. But it's also got a unique feature of some of the more expensive, sophisticated mics, and that is dual diaphragm. So it has two diaphragms, one on the front and one on the rear. Can't really see it through the grill, but trust me, there's two diaphragms. There's one front and one back. And so what that lets you do is switch patterns. So there's a pattern switch on here, and right now it's in the popular cardioid pickup pattern. But it also has an omni pickup pattern, which means it picks up more or less a perfect frequency response all the way around the microphone in all directions.
Which is good for, like, if you're in an interview situation or recording an orchestra or something like that.
Yeah, it's the most accurate, typically the most accurate pickup, so that it's pretty flat in regards to its pickup characteristics.
And have you guys talked about proximity effect? Because for those people having issues with working the mic too close, it's omni that can save your butt if your recordings are getting too muddy.
Good point. Interesting. Right. Yeah, when you're in omni, that proximity effect is all but removed, right? It's pretty much gone in omni mode.
Oh, well, and it's always that function of the more directional we make the mic, the more severe the proximity effect becomes, which is why we like those shotguns and that low bar. Polar pattern is very, very narrow. It's,
right.
You know, there's a lot of rejection, but that also means the closer you get, the more it's going to start to overemphasize mid and low frequency sound.
Exactly. So you get a lot of flavor. When you have a switchable pattern like this, it gives you a lot of flavors. It also has figure of eight pattern, which is really an interesting pattern that's native to ribbon microphones, which, again, we'll get to talk about a lot more when we have our interview with Wes Dooley. But the figure eight pattern gives you pretty much exactly the same pickup on the front and the rear of the microphone, but then rejects the pickup on either side pretty effectively. And that pickup pattern is very directional. It really does pick up very much what's front and back and not much on the side. Great for singing or interviewing on either side of the mic, but also could be helpful if you've got a piece of glass or something right off to the side of the microphone and you want to reject it, as long as you have something on the back to absorb that. Reflection, a good absorbing panel, then that could work well too. So don't just default to the cardioid and expect that's the setting you use. It may not be the case in your studio, so don't be afraid to try different things. So that's a U87. I don't have the shock mount for it yet. I'm waiting for it, but it has that typical large spider-looking shock mount that you see.
And that shock mount is generally more expensive than most other microphones.
The shock mount, it rivals the cost of most of the other cheaper or less expensive Chinese microphones that are out there. So that's that guy. Then I'll pull out both mics just to compare the size. But here's one that I'm less familiar with, and this is the – I'm really interested in trying this one out tomorrow. This is the TLM-193.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot like the U87 from just overall.
A little tinier.
It's smaller, yeah. It's like a shrunken version. And it's a more. Is this a more modern design, Juan? This was like one that came out later on in the series, and they were trying to use it as a possible replacement?
Because a lot of the Neumann mics, you mentioned that this is the U87 is dual capsules front and back.
Right.
The capsules from the U87 are very similar to the capsules that they use in the other mic that you've got, the TLM-103.
Right.
And so the TLM-193 was supposed to be the little brother to the successor to the U87, which is the U89, which was going to move from a three-polar pattern to a five-polar pattern. It was sort of Neumann's response to the AKG C414 trying to take that multi-pattern reference mic up another level, up another stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it never really quite caught on like the U87 did. But the TLM-193 is sort of the one capsule version of the U89. And so that design sort of references the U89 design, which is a lot like the U87.
Gotcha.
I always thought it was really interesting that the TLM-193 didn't resemble the TLM-103, because the 103 is probably one of their most popular mics.
Yeah, which we also have as well, because we're looking for three mics that I thought would have somewhat contrasting sounds that we could all try in the same booth with the same voice actor. So we also got a 103 as well, which in here in LA I know are very popular in the booths I've worked in or been around. It used to be the Baby Neumann. It used to be the least expensive one until they came out with a 102. Dan's got one hanging there too. And I think does this share a capsule from the U87 AI? I think it.
I'm pretty sure the capsule in the 103 is if it's not the same capsule, it's very similarly tuned to the capsules that you'll find in the U87 AI.
Right, and it's definitely a physically large capsule in there compared to the 193. If you can just about make, yeah, there you go. You can probably see it in the grill there versus what's inside the 103. Actually, it's just the ring that's maybe different. The capsules themselves look like they might be
the same size. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, this is the 103 is a little smaller, has a smaller body, so it's just an optical illusion.
A stubbier body.
Right.
So that's just a fraction of the Neumann mics that they have. I have their Neumann microphone finder open at neumann.com/mic finder, and you can go through there and look and see the variety they have. There's quite a few. So, you know, what a lot of people will certainly ask is why? Why are there so many Neumann microphones?
I was going to ask why.
Right. What's the point in having all these different microphones? How are they different? And the short answer is because they all sound different. That's the shortest of the shortest answers.
That's actually probably the best accurate answer you can give to that question.
Yeah.
Else we'd always just want to ask, why isn't there only ever just one microphone? Why bother making... You know, Shures and AKGs and Blues and...
Yeah, we talk about accuracy, right? We want the mic to be accurate. Well, that's not actually really true. An absolutely accurate microphone would be not so great at all to record on. There's a microphone, it's called a measuring microphone. I have one in my car, and it's just an omnidirectional mic. It's designed to be as close to ruler flat as possible. And yeah, it's serviceable. You put it in the right place in a good sounding room, and it sounds okay. But it's very lifeless. It's just, it's flat. It's super accurate. And these mics are not designed to be flat. They're designed to all have different characters. So Dan and I were talking before, it's like paintbrushes, albeit very, very expensive paintbrushes.
Very expensive.
But they all have their own tonal characteristic. And that is why an established studio that's been around the block a couple of decades will have a pretty impressive mic closet, because... The other thing is microphones maintain their value very well, and when they're cared for, they last for years and years and years. In fact, there's studios out there, I'm sure you've probably worked in some of them, Juan, that probably have mics that are older than Dan in them.
Wow.
Well, maybe not the oldest person, older than Dan.
No, I mean...
Throw Dan a bone there.
There are tube microphones. I think the first Neumann microphones that were condenser were tube. Because they predated solid state. And some of those mics are extremely desirable to this day, like the U67, U47. And those mics are, valued in upwards $8,000 to $10,000 nowadays, and they're still working. So mics are a pretty good investment. They may not gain in value for a very long time, but they don't lose a whole heck of a lot of value. But
their value is in the quality of the audio you get out of them. But again, also the longevity is probably one of the most important factors. They're like buying a good car. You know, it's going to last a while.
A Neumann mic is going to last a long time. A long time. So, I was thinking about plugging them all and testing them, but that would be a very tedious process to do right now. And with our show processing that we do on the show, there's quite a lot of layers of junk we do. But... on the sound, but I will have audio samples that we record with them tomorrow when I demo them at my client's house. So that'll give me some material, and then I can throw that up later or use it on the show or play it or put it up on our website so you guys can hear them.
I'll be curious to see what you think of the 193, because the sound of the 103 and the U87, we just understand that sound in voiceover. Like we just know it. We're just so comfortable with the U87 that when we stray from the way that the U87 sort of colors audio, it can be a little jarring for some people.
Mm. Well, that's what I hope. I want it to be different. You know, I want it to be contrasting to the others. And then what we're going to do is whatever the mic he likes the most or we like the most, we're going to have ship the others back, and then they're going to send us a 173, I think it is. Yeah, the 170, oh, no, wow. The 170R and I think a 67. So just some other flavors.
Oh, I was going to say the other one that I would want to throw in that test would be a 67.
Yeah, TLM, right, 67. Cool. So we're going to have some
67
more flavors.
67 gets really analytical.
Yeah,
it's you were talking about having like reference grade mm-hmm. microphones. The 67 is not, in my opinion, is not a very flattering microphone. So if you sound good on a 67, it's because you sound good.
Good.
Well,
point.
The best horses get the best jockeys.
Right.
So that's my bit on the mics. We'll have more detail and more samples for you guys to check out later on.
Excellent. All right. Well, we got a lot more coming up. We're going to talk a little bit more with Juan in just a few minutes. And we've got my tip of the week coming up. And, of course, your questions. We want to answer your questions. We want to get back into that a little bit.
You know, that's right.
Guys are like, what's wrong with my studio? That's how we started this show. And somehow it turned into the Tonight Show. We're not quite sure how that happened. But, anyway, we'll be right back looking at a tip of the week and lots more stuff right here on East West Audio Body Shop. So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Are you planning on doing tonight? I thought so. Now back to East West Audio Body Shop with Dan and George.
Why, thank you. And it's Monday night. You know, what do you think? Monday night? You know, let's take a show of hands here. Who likes Monday night? It's, okay. And it's one of those things where we thought, you know, Sunday night was great. You know, we know people were home and stuff like that, but we also know you're home on Monday night. What are you going to do on a Monday night? Tuesday night, we know, is bowling night. Wednesday night is when everybody goes out and gets drunk.
In Buffalo.
In Buffalo. All right. So it's a little local flavor there. That's not what I do on Wednesday night. Usually like stay at home and you know,
I think Tuesday night and Wednesday night are like webinar nights. Every webinar on a Tuesday or Wednesday night?
Right. So instead, you can join us every Monday night.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're here to solve your problems. That's why we've been here, you know, for the last 105 episodes, trying to figure out what's wrong with your voiceover studios, or more importantly, what's right with them. And hopefully, we've improved the quality of everybody's audio somewhere along the line. But one of the things that is, you got that racked up, the tip of the week thing,
yeah, I do.
Bob, there? Okay. One of the things that's most important is what you're recording on. You know, we used to have reel-to-reel tape, and then there was DAT, and then, you know, some people were recording to CDs, and some people were still using, you know, little microcassette recorders to send auditions in, I'm sure. But now it's a lot easier. But one of the most important things is software. So let's go into the tip of the week and take a look at that.
You got it.
No doubt about it. I get this question more than any other question. Hey, Dan, what's the best recording software?
What's the best recording software?
What's the best recording software?
Dan, what's the best recording software?
What's the best recording software?
What is the best recording software?
Well, that depends on three important considerations. Are you Mac or PC? What exactly are you doing? And, of course, what's your budget? You sure do have a lot of choices, too. I mean, look at this. SoundForge, Audacity, Reaper, Logic Studio, Audition, Twisted Wave. They're all great platforms. However, there's one I recommend you don't use. Yeah, this guy. Why do I have a problem with this guy? Because Pro Tools is designed primarily for producing music, not voiceover. Yeah, it's great for major production, but not for what we do. So let's change the question. What's the best recording software for voiceover? So in other words, what's easy to use, but does everything you need it to do for simple dry voiceover and perhaps a little bit of enhancement?
There's a lot to be said for Audacity. It's great because it's free. It teaches you the basics of visual editing, and it's got a lot of effects that will help you out. But it has one major drawback.
You can't scrub. You can't play the audio manually by just taking the cursor and running along the audio. The ability to scrub, or as we used to say in radio, rock the reels, allows you to listen to the audio by moving it back and forth on the cursor, like this. This is scrubbing, being able to do this. It makes it a lot easier to find your cue points because you can hear them as well as see them. And this is Twisted Wave, which I think is a great program. And it's only $79. But alas, it's Mac only. If you're a PC, you have other choices. SoundForge is a great program, and Audacity will work on there, simple and inexpensive. But there is a good multi-platform program that's my favorite. Adobe Audition. There's a reason that I like this software. This software is the best software there is for doing voiceover. It was designed for doing voiceover, mostly for putting together video to voice, which, by the way, kids, is what we do. I think that's an important thing to think about. As you can see, it's a very easy interface, a lot like Photoshop. As a matter of fact, Audition is Photoshop for audio. And here's why I say that. This is a spectrogram. It's showing different frequencies in their relative volume. And this is auto heal. Once you learn how to use this, you'll be able to remove sounds like mouth clicks and nasal thumps and all sorts of stuff just by trying to find these little anomalies like this one here, highlighting it, hitting auto heal, and it's gone. It's magic. Yeah, it's a little more expensive, but it's worth it, and you can use it on Mac and PC. I suggest you try their 30-day trial. As a matter of fact, I say if you really want to find the best software for you, use some of the 30-day free trials that all these companies have, like Sony with SoundForge, and of course Audacity is free, and Audition and Twisted Wave. They all give you 30-day free trials to find out if it works for you. And that's my tip of the week.
Yeah, I guess it all has to do with your workflow, and it's what works best for you, I think, is the most important way to put it. I know what I use. I use Audition and Twisted Wave because there's certain features I like in both. I know Twisted Wave is great for doing long format stuff because it's such a simple program, and of course I have so much memory in my Mac Mini now. It's not really a problem, but Twisted Wave is always very, very reliable for doing long format narrations.
Yeah.
Plus, it also is great at cutting up files, which I really, really like. That's a huge time saver once you're able to figure out how to do that. But Audition has so many great features to it, and as I said, it really is designed for producing a dry voiceover, and not even dry voiceover. It's really designed for creating voice tracks for video. So it's designed essentially to be like Photoshop for voice.
Mm-hmm.
And once you master all those skills, it's really, really nice.
Yeah, so. It's pretty awesome. I always liken TwistaWave as like the SoundForge for Mac, until at least SoundForge did come out for Mac. That's a whole nother story. But TwistaWave I've been a big fan of because I used to use SoundForge a lot. I also used to use a program called WaveLab by Steinberg, and I loved that. That was, I used to do live concert recording on a Pentium 90 IBM ThinkPad, and it was rock solid. I could do live recordings with that thing. I had a Digigram card that slid into the PCM slot. It was like a $500 sound card. Anyway, so I digress.
One of my favorites was Magic's Music Producer, but that was like 1999 or so.
When
those first came out.
It cracks me. Like, people are like, what computer do I need to record audio? I'm like, I've been recording audio to a computer since the 90s.
Yeah.
I know people that have been dabbling since the 80s. I'm like, you don't need a monster machine to record a track of, you know, a voiceover track, you know?
Really?
Just keep it clean.
Yeah, and to clarify one thing, because I, you know, we talked about Mac versus PC last week, and that's the thing about Pro Tools. I really don't have anything against Pro Tools. It's a fantastic program, but it's not something you start with. It's not a beginner's program. You know, all these guys say, it's not hard to learn. Well, yeah, there's arm this, do that. When you do this, make sure this is all lined up.
You jump through like five fiery hoops before you even hit record.
And then Twisted Wave, it's hit record. There's really not a whole lot to it, and it records just as well, and it's all still ones and zeros, and it all still sounds the same in the long run. So and remember, those tracks can always go onto Pro Tools somewhere else, so don't let anyone tell you that ain't the case.
That's right.
Anyway, Juan Carlos Bagnell, some audio guy is what he goes by, will be joining us in just a minute, and we got lots of great questions for him, talking about voice casting and voiceover direction, and of course we'll take your questions in the chat room. So stay tuned, we'll be right back here on East West Audio Body Shop with some audio guy.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his helmet.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, George has set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
This is East West Audio Body Shop, where Dan and George don't speak geek.
Well, occasionally.
We got to speak geek once in a while. We got Juan here.
That's right. He doesn't appear to be much of a geek. Juan Carlos Bagnell, some audio guy. Welcome to the show. Welcome to, again, to East West.
He's got a Superman logo on his shirt. You're telling me he's not a geek?
How geekier I could be for you guys. like Prince of the Geeks or something. No, but thank you for having me, guys. I've been a big fan, so I'm really stoked to be on and chatting with you guys.
Great. Well, now you have a slightly different occupation in the voiceover business. Now, I'll ask: Have you been a voice actor yourself?
I book about 3 or 4 jobs a year just from being in the right place at the right time. But I don't audition. It wasn't really my pursuit to be a performer in moving out to California.
Right. So it's one of those things. Hey, you, come here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. like it used to be in a radio station. I need that sales guy. He's got the voice for this sort of thing.
You just chose not to exploit that whole angle.
Right. Well, and also I kind of feel like it's to be cultivating good relationships with agents and with talent. I've always felt it was a little scummy if You know, yeah. I was also cherry picking a bunch of jobs to audition on, because the work that I get, it's typically very, very lean competition. You know, I might only be one of 30 people auditioning for a job for anything that comes my way.
Right. Well, you're now you're a casting director and you're a voiceover director. I mean, so you're working on that whole process there. What's really involved in what you do? Now, I think the majority of the folks that are, you know, our regular viewers to the show, we're doing mostly a lot of online stuff, not a lot of people sitting in the same casting room staring at each other and psyching each other out and that sort of thing. What's really different? What goes into, you know, your process of casting for a commercial?
Well, first off, let me just dispel that myth, because think people would be very happy to see that voice actors in Southern California are some of the most open, gregarious, giving performers that you could ever hope to work with.
I agree.
And we also cultivate a sort of a camaraderie. So for those actors that try and play the on-camera mind games of sitting in the lobby, trying to psych people out, some of that slightly more rude behavior, scattering the copy that I've seen on on-camera casting sessions, it just doesn't fly. We don't like it. We don't want to work with people like that. And so I think voiceover is one of those last bastions. And people are genuinely so happy to see each other outside of their closets. You sort of fosters some goodwill, you know, like it's a novel experience. We don't do face-to-face casting nearly as often as we do webcasting these days. So it's a treat. It's not something that people get up in arms with or try and psych each other out.
Well, that's good
I primarily cast commercials in Southern California. I work through a company called The Voice Caster, where I do most of my casting with. And then as a freelance casting director and voice director, I do a lot of industrial work with post-production facilities around town.
So what goes into casting? I mean, we're always wondering, you know, you send that audition down the line. What is it that a casting director is looking for? I mean, obviously there's the script, there's whatever it is that the writer had in mind, and then you're not the writer, you're the casting director. How do you work with them, with an agency and these guys that write absolute poetry in Hollywood? I mean, the copywriters there are, it's, you know, compared to some local copy. I mean, how do you do that?
Well, you know, an advertising exec will work with a production facility, and so we might be involved on either side of that. The ad agency might reach out to us directly, depending on what stage of the commercial process they're in, or the post-production facility might reach out to us, depending on who's actually going to be finishing up that spot. But they give us a cutting of the script. They give us sort of what they are hoping is going to vibe with the video that they've shot or the audio that they need to master if it's a radio spot. And then usually after that, we'll try and glean from them about how many options they're going to want to listen to. And so between a half day or a full day of casting, that means I'll be able to listen to between 15 and 30 voices. I'm usually only good for about 30 to 35 actual people in front of me face to face over the course of a day before I'm really not that effective anymore. And then we collect up all those auditions, and if the client wants more feedback on that, we'll make recommendations, or we'll talk about whether or not we need to refine what their description of the job was. And but usually after a day of casting with 30 choices, as long as they were really honest with us about what it was they were looking for in the first place, we can usually nail what they're looking for.
It's I take it it's a lot of aha moments. It's like that one.
Well, and especially with the producers that we work with, you know, if it's a first time producer, that process isn't something that a lot of people are comfortable with. And so we'll start asking them questions, and some people will actually get defensive. Like, we might be questioning their commercial, or they might be questioning what they're going for. It's with the producers that we've worked with, that we've had long-term relationships with. You get to that shorthand very quickly. It's very much like, you know, when an actor works with a director a lot,
right?
You know, yeah. I know what he's thinking. Exactly. Right. And you can kind of anticipate what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Right. So it's how long does it usually take you to cast something, like in a day or I guess it's probably different all the time, but what's the average on something like
you know,
that?
It really just depends on the size of the project. Like if we're doing a voice of campaign, you know, it's something that we really want to sit down and carefully consider who it is that we're putting on that project. Because again, we're one of the reasons people come to a casting facility is so that they can eliminate some of the work filtering out voices from, you know, it's nothing against someone who might have sent a submission. It might be an amazing audition, but it might be completely off spec once they start hearing voices, you know, once they actually start chewing through the auditions that they've got. So that's really what we're in the business of, facilitating those relationships and then helping narrow down that search to very selected and targeted actors for specific roles. So a voice of campaign, we might actually try and prolong that relationship just a little bit longer, make sure everyone's on the same page, make sure we're all communicating the way that we should, that we're reaching out to the agents, that we're getting good options for the talent that we're going to be auditioning, and that the talent are working in a comfortable environment, because we really want them to be doing their best. If right. if we're going to take the time to put them in our booth, you know, that's most of the battle right there, is just the selection of who we're going to be listening to. So when right. they come in, I really want to make sure they've got the time to succeed, to really deliver the audition that we're hoping that they're going to give us.
Right.
But now, typically, if it's a radio spot, I might be able to turn it around in 24 hours. It really just depends on what stage of the process they're in and how quickly they need the turnaround.
Right. Now, is most of the talents you work with through agents and mostly union or what?
Mostly union. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that common that I do, myself personally, that I'll pick up a non-union casting job. And part of that is just the infrastructure that you work in. So like if someone wants a full day's worth of casting from me, I'm probably good for about 20 of the 30 voices that I'll want to listen to. Just off the top of my head, pulling up my smartphone, I can usually fill about 2/3 of those spots. But getting to that last third, getting those last 10 voices in to make sure I've got, you know, I'm really giving them variety. I really need to be able to communicate with agents. I really need to be able to communicate with people that can send me something fresh. I need to be on top of what new talent's out there. And so that relationship becomes vital. And agents in LA, anyway, typically don't like playing on non-union stuff.
Right. Are you finding yourself casting people from the hinterlands outside of the Los Angeles basin?
Myself personally, no. Recently, VoiceCaster has been tackling a few more regionally specific commercials where they want to hear options from talent in other, usually larger markets. It's not uncommon that they'll see, we want to hear 15 voices out of LA, 15 voices out of New York, 15 voices out of Chicago. That does pop up occasionally. But it's funny where LA just sort of has so much more mind share as a collection of good talent, that we recently did foreign casting, and we did the commercial campaigns for a major tech company in German, Japanese, French, Canadian, French, European French, European Spanish, and Mexican Spanish, all from talent that was located in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Interesting. So once you're casting, then you change roles, and many times you act as the actual director. And I think a lot of people probably haven't had the chance to really work with an actual voiceover director, although some of our coaches are very, very good directors and stuff. But when you're, what's it like on the other side of the glass, and what is it that you're trying to do as the director?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about commercials is, the blessing and the curse is that the clients have a problem, and the problem often is they don't really know what they want. And so when we're really doing our job in casting, my job as a director is so easy, because we're really trying to get, especially the current zeitgeist in advertising, is all about honesty, testimonial, drawing people into these really small, single-serving emotional relationships. You know, we're really trying to get to that honest vibe as efficiently as possible. So when we nail the casting and the client really responds to a voice, there's very little that I have to do as a director outside of guiding. You know, it's subtle adjustments here. It's a push or pull there. It's maybe the talent isn't aware of the inflection of the tagline that they've been using consistently. So we want to help inform that. And you become a little bit more of a facilitator. When the casting isn't clicking, and when I've got to kind of manhandle someone, you know, there's going to be a lot of frustration on all ends, because it ends up becoming that exercise of trying to get someone to do something that's not really a part of their vibe, or not really a part of their whatever-ish.
Right.
stuff. Right. And so it ends up becoming like my voice coming out of their face. And that's actually one of the reasons why I've booked a couple of jobs is the clients start hearing me line reading.
Hey, why don't you do it? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I was on CNBC for 3 years because of that. So, you know, like I can't complain, but that's not really what I try to do. That's not really what I want my job to be in this town. I don't like being a poacher.
Yeah, really. Okay, so back to the audition thing, because the direction thing is something I think once somebody's in the booth, they understand what a director's trying to do. And, you know, many times I'm sure there's lots of hands that want to reach out. I know what you want. But what's the biggest mistake that talent make, in your opinion? I mean, first off, with auditions, what's a big mistake people make?
In the casting process, the absolute biggest mistake anyone can make walking into a face-to-face casting, especially for commercials, is not having a clear idea of what it is they're trying to accomplish. It's vital. It's a number one. It sounds like the most basic piece of advice that anyone can give, but we have all of these little tricks, you know, like the talk to one person trick, or you know, the imagine a scenario trick. We have all these little tricks which in some cases can actually distract people from actually trying to accomplish what they're there to do. And so you walk in, they walk into the booth and they're looking for the director to feed them, you know, what they're supposed to feel or think about a piece of copy, when really the task of commercial casting is to get someone to provide us an informed perspective, is to get them to provide us a personality. And again, when I have to kind of feed you that, it's not really your game. It's statistically unlikely that you're going to be the one that stands above the rest of the talent. And the people who crush commercials know what they do. They know what they sound like. They know what they can bring to a piece of copy or to a company or to a piece of advertising. They walk in, they're confident, they've made a choice. And even if their choice is wrong, not that this is really a common occurrence, but if their choice is completely wrong, I at least have a much clearer perspective of where they're coming from. So my redirect is even easier when someone just comes in with a clearly defined choice of what they're trying to accomplish.
So what can someone do to increase their chances then? I mean, we've got lots of people trying to break into it. You're working with, obviously, with the elites in Hollywood and people that are, as you say, who crush commercials, and they're constantly the guys that are doing it day after day after day and getting the big paychecks day after day after day. You know, this movie has not yet been rated. a little inside joke there. But it's what is it that's going to bring somebody from – you know, who's obviously good, because we know a lot of people that are extremely talented that are not in Hollywood, and they, you know, how can they increase their chances of being able to get cast in these sorts of things?
You know, it's a slightly more difficult question for me to answer because I'm not used to working at the entry level of voiceover, but the behaviors that I see from the people who book consistently and make not only just make their living off of voiceover, but make a very good living off of voiceover are people that have a love of language, and they consume language on such a regular basis that their sense of analyzing copy becomes intuitive. So we're talking about people with careers the better part of 10, 20 years that can cold read copy better than most people will sit there and mark it up and try and analyze it and come up with questions and answers. So really, I would say you really want to be looking at your career as a business that's going to span decades, not at some point I'll be a professional and that'll be my career. You know, that'll be my job. You really want to be looking at this as some sort of holistic life choice. You need to love this line. You need to love selling soap. I don't care if you love the soap,
but you enjoy selling it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that this is becoming a part. And this is, a little bit more focused on commercials. Animation is a slightly different beast, even though it's all still VO, but really incorporating that into sort of your life structure in a meaningful fashion and building off of that. And I don't know if either of you guys have read Malcolm Gladwell. You know, if you start reading a book like Outliers, and they talk about, you know, 10,000 hours of intense study, I really do see that relating to the people who are, you know, we would say are innate talents in voiceover. There are people that genuinely love consuming language, and they embrace language. And they have this knack at making commercial copy, which I think even, you know, you were going to pay us a compliment that we get better written copy, but I think part of it is that people get really good at making copywriters sound better than they deserve. And that's your job as a voice talent, you know, that's what we pay you for.
That's so, right.
You know, that's what I would, at least sort of the behavior that I hope more people would embrace, so that we can see the game raised all over the place, you know, so we can make all of these markets a little more competitive.
Yeah. Well, moving away from that a little bit, you're also, all right, let's put it plainly, you're a geek.
Thank you. I'm embracing it.
Yes, embrace your geekiness. Live your geekiness.
Oh yeah.
You do a tech blog.
I write for two tech blogs. I'm the senior editor of yourtechreport.com, and then I'm also the LA Tech Examiner on examiner.com. I just recently picked up that
book. Nice.
And then I'm also a co-producer and co-host on the Your Tech Report SiriusXM radio show, which broadcasts every Saturday. We have a one-hour weekly tech chat show where we talk about smartphones and tablets and toys and all kinds of fun stuff.
So you're into all of it then, all the toys and...
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I was born with an 8088 XT clone running DOS 3 under my fingertips. So, you know, I field stripped my first PC when I was like 5.
TI-99/4A here. Thank you very much. We had our computer doing prank phone calls in 1983. So I love it.
Great. But no, but I mean, it's just become, and especially right now is a great time for people like me, because geek has become chic. You know, there's everyone has to embrace some level of tech savviness. So when I was in grade school, you know, I would get laughed at for like my pocket organizer and, you know, all of my little portable electronics and my graphing calculators and stuff. But now people have to have glowing rectangles all around them. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I was ahead of the curve.
What do you think is the next biggest thing that's coming in tech?
Oh, well, in terms of consumer tech, I think the smartphone has gotten about as good as it can get. We will constantly see refinement and evolutionary improvement. But when it comes to holding a slab of rectangular glass, which blocks the rest of the world from you, this is about as good as the experience can get. If it's an iPhone, if it's an Android, if it's a Windows phone, I don't really think it matters anymore. They all do the basics pretty much about as well as any other. So I really think that we'll start to see a push into interacting with data in a more world-friendly way, in a more safe way, especially for people that use technology in their cars, which you should absolutely not be doing if it's distracting you from operating a motor vehicle. I recently just covered Werner Herzog produced a documentary called From One Second to the Next, and it's free to watch on YouTube. It's a half hour long.
Cool.
He follows the lives of four families that have been affected by people texting while driving, and I would highly recommend.
Oh, geez.
Okay.
But I really think that what we'll start to see is stuff that brings this technology closer to our natural senses. Like Google Glass is a perfect example of moving the display closer just to our natural sense of sight in a way that allows us to continue to interact with technology in a way that's far less distracting when we're out and socializing, and should be safer in situations like we're walking around in a town that we've never been in before, or we're driving an automobile. I mean, it's the year 2013, and you still need to take your eyes off the road just to see how fast you're going in a car. You think we would have solved that problem by now, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
We got five questions from the chat room. We don't want to keep you for more than another 5 minutes. So we're going to do, you know, so can we get through five and five?
Lightning round.
Five and
Lightning.
Five.
Let's do it.
All right. So from I'll do J.S. Gilbert first. What's the biggest mistake talent make, in your opinion?
I think we asked that one already.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that was easy. So ding. D-Box says, how do you challenge VO actors to get something special out of them?
Really, it's not about getting something special out of them. For commercial stuff, I really want to embrace what they bring naturally. And that's why we spend so much time creating the lists that we do. When you're in the booth, it's because I already have a sense of you, that there's something right about you for this project. So you don't need to wow me at that point. You need to do what you do. You need to give me the best possible version of yourself.
Good answer.
Yeah.
JS asks, also, are most of the talent you work with through agents? I think we did actually ask that question. You covered this question, so we'll skip that one, too.
I was paying attention.
Pat asked Juan how he defines conversational for VO delivery. The silver bullet, conversational.
Well, it's going to change per commercial. So, like, if we're talking conversational and banking, then there's probably a sense of vulnerability because banks haven't really been good to us of late, and they're trying to help improve their image and being a part of their community. We're all in the struggle together.
We're here to make your life better. We promise.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're a part of your community too, even though we maybe are responsible for wrecking some communities.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of banking spots.
Not anymore.
But conversational and automobiles might be testimonial. So, especially I think Ford's campaigns have been genius lately. Like, I used to drive a BMW, but check out this new Ford Edge. You know, it's about trying to get us to reconsider something about that product or brand. So conversational, we like to throw it out there as a buzzword, but the word itself really doesn't mean anything until we apply context. And so this is where that kind of approach to your craft and how you love language and consume language starts to inform what is it that the producers are trying to accomplish and what is it that the character that they wrote for you is trying to accomplish. And those often aren't the same goal. Mm. So you really kind of want to get into the mind of not only the copywriter, but of the character that they wrote. And that really helps it better inform what the approach might be to deliver something which sounds comfortable or casual or conversational or words that don't begin with the letter C.
Right. All right. And Devox has a good one here. Have clients been changing what they're asking for over the last year or two? Do we see an evolution of styles?
They change all the time, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, advertising is a constant state of flux. But out of the worst of the housing and banking collapse, everyone was rushing to embrace vulnerability, honesty, simplicity, natural deliveries. Right now, we're starting to see a little economic recovery. Some people are taking some more risks. The web is starting to really influence how we perceive entertainment media. And so we're starting to occasionally see spec pop up from YouTubers and descriptions of podcasts and popular web series. I unfortunately also see a lot of stuff becoming more random, sort of random wacky for random's sake, like bad jokes from Family Guy kind of random. And so that's starting to kind of color and pepper some of the more youth oriented advertising that we see as well.
All right. Well, it's amazing, that we can get you on the show, a guy who's up there, who really is, you're probably one of the freshest minds we've had on this show. I mean, there's a lot of people with big egos, and not that a lot of people on the show we ever have big egos, but you really express it the way it needs to be expressed. I think a lot of people are glad to see a down to earth person on the other end these days.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm gonna put that quote on my blog now. Dan Leonard, the freshest voice we've ever had on the show.
I like it.
Just totally made my night. Now I'm really stoked now.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being with us tonight, Juan. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're gonna have to have you on again. I like what you have to say.
I'd love to do it again, guys. This is a blast.
Excellent. All righty. Juan Carlos Bagnell, some audio guy, joining us tonight on East West Audio Body Shop. We got lots more coming up in just a couple of minutes, so stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dave Courvoisier. These days, to get anything accomplished in your voiceover business, you've got to spend some time online. We audition online, we share with others in online communities. Maybe you've even done some online training along the way. So here's the next big thing. It's called VoiceOver Virtual. It's this giant two-day online voiceover conference that's coming to you this September. And because it's online, you can attend and participate from anywhere on your computer. Wait a minute, I know what you're saying. An online voiceover conference? How does that work? Well, it works pretty well, actually. There'll be training with dozens of the industry's top professionals. You'll find an innovative and interactive exhibit hall with some exclusive bargains. You can have private online meetings with agents, and casting professionals, and trainers, even get your demo evaluated. There will be plenty of chances to network with your colleagues, even make some new friends social media style. Pretty cool, right? Well, as your virtual MC, I'll be telling you more in the weeks to come about this amazing event produced by your friends at VoiceOver Extra with the help of some of the industry's top pros. Right now, why not just take a moment to check out this website and learn more? And if you want to get the lowest possible price on all this, check out the VO Virtual special offer at the registration button. See you in September online, okay?
Welcome back to eWabs. We were expecting you, but we still didn't bake a cake. Here's Dan and George.
Yes. Well, you know, time is like running out here. We almost forgot to talk about our sponsor.
I know. Our favorite guy.
Harlan Hogan at voiceoveressentials.com got all the best stuff for voiceover. Because, face it, there's not a whole lot of stuff we need. But if you need it, he's got it. What's on their website this week?
What's cooking?
What kind of specials do they have this week?
Well, yeah, they had a special end just last week on Monday.
Oh,
so
we
missed that one. But he's always got, oh, thanks, Adobe Update Flash Player, blah, blah, blah. Perfect timing. Right on cue. Thank you. Go away. I love it. I love Adobe Flash, man. Nobody appreciates Adobe Flash anymore. Maybe because it's butting its head in at the wrong time every time.
I know. Plus, it's not going anywhere. But exactly. Anyway, VoiceOver Essentials. Now there's one that the ABS, the adjustable boom stop.
Oh yeah.
Now there's something you wouldn't think about, except of course if your microphone's going to start falling over on you.
I know. This is one of those products. I'll bring it up here on the screen, big screen here. It's one of those products that. This is why we love Harlan. He sees a problem, he hears about a problem, and he gets, in the case of this product, the ABS, he thought of it because somebody sent him one of the mics that had crashed to the floor. And he graciously had it replaced for the guy, which is really nice. And in the process, he realized there's clearly a need for a product to help keep this from happening. You know, in a lot of cases, we're using mic booms that are not really designed for holding some of the heavier mics. The pivots were the not the clutch, but wherever the thing is that holds the boom up, the pivot,
right.
Whatever. They're not made very well a lot of the time, and they start sagging, or worse off, they just completely fail. So this strap will brace your heavier microphone and keep the boom from sagging. Stop boom sag with the ABS.
It's a jock strap for your boom stand.
That's right. That's basically what it is.
Well, enough of that. You can get it at VoiceOver Essentials. It's on sale for $19.95 this week.
That's right.
You know, and so if you've got like a really heavy mic and you've had that problem and you're like, you know, throwing sandbags and stuff on the bottom of your thing, this is a great thing to try. So
exactly.
Go on over to voiceoveressentials.com and buy this stuff because it's good stuff. And it's not expensive, easy to get. Just go onto the website and tell them we sent you. That's the most important thing.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you, Harlan.
Thank you, Harlan. You've been there since the very beginning. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I don't want this show to drag on too much longer, but I did want to mention I'm going to start talking about some of the blogs that I've been paying attention to lately. And there's obviously a few bloggers out there that we can't miss. But before that, just a couple really, really short announcements. We want to tell you who's coming up on our show.
Yeah.
And what's up with us lately. Well, we want to thank our our donors, actually. We've had a couple donors in the last week. I actually have them marked in my email. Pat Sweeney, dude, you are always like, man, I can't tell you. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Pat.
You can always count on you. Paul Pape, right after he was on the show, he gave us a donation. That was really nice.
Yep.
Lee Penny, you the man. What else can I say?
Yep.
Eric Aragone. Thank you. You're just a perennial donor. I really appreciate it. And one just seems to have popped up from JS. You're the man, JS. Thank you very much. Thanks for all those donations.
Yeah.
What else? So our sponsors, we talked about Harlan. Thank you, Harlan, so much.
Right.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, and if you're frustrated with Ustream when you're watching the show live and it's not streaming very well, then please have the patience to watch the show again on YouTube, or just watch it on YouTube.
Right. It's been clean at this end this week.
It has.
I mean our art's been rock solid with what we're doing.
I will say that YouTube just announced that they're offering those with 100 subscribers or more to stream live on YouTube.
Ooh.
So maybe we'll experiment with that
coming up soon.
I have, chances are it may be smoother for some people, so I just have to figure out the logistics on that. So stay tuned about that.
Yeah.
Got David Kay coming on August 19th. Poker Classic.
Classic on the 24th. We're going to do a hangout on August 26th. So if you want to be part of our hangout on August 26th, email us with a private invite.
Yeah, email us and send a question that you'd like to discuss, some topic or question you'd like to discuss. That'll help move the show along. We want to keep that show just as interesting as all the others. They're a lot of fun. We just want to keep it educational too.
Right.
Labor Day, we're gonna rest that evening, that day, take the day off, September 2nd, and then going all the way up to September 9th, we got Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal. Yeah, they are actors, animators, and authors of the VO Behind the Mic,
and we hear they're fabulous.
Yeah,
so I'm that should be an interesting show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that wraps it up pretty much.
Yeah, I was just going to mention a couple of the blogs that have come up, and I will keep it really short.
Take your time.
But a couple of the bloggers I follow all the time. We've got one of them, Nether Voice, over at nethervoice.com. That's Paul.
Paul Straquerda.
Thank you for saying his name, because I was about to say it wrong. I blow his name all the time. But he wrote a piece called Good Enough is Never Enough, and I just thought it was interesting that it's kind of timely, and it starts out, "Dear voice casting agencies, you're being deceived." So there's a good teaser. Go check out nethervoice.com. His articles are always very compelling, and I think this one's going to be an interesting one that's going to kind of dovetail off of what we were talking about with Juan tonight. So that's a good one. Another one that I popped up that I thought looked compelling that you guys might look at is Soundstreak just came out with their version, officially came out with version 1.0. So, and Dave Cavassier, Corvo, has been really dialed into what's going on with Soundstreak. He's been really kind of just in lockstep with their releases and stuff. So go over to Corvo's blog, take a look. His blog is actually, I had it. Is it just Corvo.biz?
No, it's what is it called? Voice acting in Vegas, or
no? Actually, the URL is Corvo.biz.
Corvo,
Corvo.biz. Check out the latest article. He's got one talking about Soundstreak. He's also got some really good articles about Google, because I know there's been a lot of controversy around the fact that Google might be sharing a little bit more information about us than we would like them to. And I will say that Google definitely knows everything about me. So I try to be a good boy. But he's got his thoughts on that. And then his latest post is, he calls it tutorial tooting. He actually did some tutorial voice work for Soundstreak. So again, he's really tied into the Soundstreak folks over there. So take a look over at Corvo.biz and see what he's up to lately. If you're not following him on the blogosphere, you're crazy. I mean, he is like almost a one-stop shop for compelling information, and he's also a bit of a geek too. So he loves reviewing product just like Juan. So another great blog to follow. But each week I'll try to get in, when we have more time to delve into more depth, I'll have a couple topics that I found around the wet net that I think you guys might want to know about.
Great. We have to have Juan on again. He was great.
Oh, absolutely. He was fantastic. I was so excited to get him on. I mean, it's great to have someone on. Everybody we have on, we're pretty much all, we're fans of them on one level or another. But Juan, I sit there on the sofa and watch him on YouTube, you know, like almost every night, you know? So it's a different level for me. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, JS is suggesting maybe we have him on a panel. That's probably not a half bad idea.
Absolutely. He would be fantastic.
Get him on the Audio Masters Roundtable.
That's right. We'll see if we can get him for the next one.
Yeah. Well, we got lots of other stuff coming up. Like we said, we've got lots of great guests coming up. VoiceOver Virtual coming up in September. We've got FAFCON coming up. Lots of great events coming up.
Oh, yeah. And, it's a busy fall. We're getting into a really busy season now.
Yeah. So hopefully all of you will have lots of voice work to do from all of this. And hopefully your studios will continue to operate properly. But if you're having a problem, write to us here at ewabshop@gmail.com. We're going to start getting it back more into people's problems and weird stuff that goes on in their studios. I remember we used to do Bad Audio of the Week.
I loved Bad Audio of the Week.
I mean, if people want to send us, maybe we should revive Bad Audio of the Week. And bring
I
that
think
one
that
back.
Would be awesome. If you guys have anything you want to contribute to Bad Audio of the Week, send it in and put Bad Audio of the Week or BAOTW in the subject so we know it's for Bad Audio of the Week. We'd love to feature it on the show.
Right. And of course good audio too if you happen to have that. But we've gotten some weird ones in the last couple of weeks and people not quite understanding, you know, what is physical and what is digital.
Yeah, right. What is happening inside the mouth and the face and what's actually happening electronically? Sometimes there's confusion about that. So we might in the future feature a segment or two about that.
Right. All righty. Well, that's going to wrap it nice and tightly up into a little bow or into a big bow. Well, we kept it almost to an hour.
All right, better get out of here.
Yeah, I know, man. They're starting to knock on the door already. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittem in the West.
And together we are East-West Audio Body Shop. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night.
Have a good night.